history is made of pure latinum.
Hello and welcome to the Collector's Corner, a supplementary edition of the Divine Treasury. My name is Mike Bovia, and on the Collector's Corner, we get to know the people behind the things we like to collect, or other things in some cases. We've talked to licensees, manufacturers, we've talked to authors, we've even talked to documentarians. As collectors, we love finding out some of the stories behind the scenes, like I'm sure you'd all love to know why my co-host has his podcast set up by his wall of Star Wars collectibles when the rest of the room is Star Trek. Inquiring minds want to know, Jamie Rogers.
Well, I'm in front of the Star Wars wall because that's the smaller wall where the couch is. If you saw the Star Trek wall, you'd know why it's on this wall.
There's no room for furniture there.
No.
Well, as mentioned, we all love behind-the-scenes information. And right now, we're in the golden age of Star Trek. We have four new series streaming on television. We have one that's ready to premiere. And we've got a couple more that are in some sort of stages of pre-production. We're also getting tie-in novels and comic books, and now an audio drama. So here to discuss that with us are the authors of No Man's Land, the audio drama that ties to Star Trek Picard. We have Mike Johnson, one of the preeminent writers of the IDW comic line for Star Trek, and Kirsten Beyer, the executive producer and co-creator of Star Trek Picard. Welcome. We're so thrilled to have the two of you on.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. My only note is Kirsten's name has to come first because I'm very much the Robin to her Batman on this. It would be like, I love watching Robin and Batman. But that's all I'll say. Thank you for having us.
And I should also note that I'm actually a co-executive producer of Star Trek Picard. I'll take the promotion, but
I was trying to keep my words short, so I just cut the co out of there.
It matters. So trust me, fellas, it matters. Oh,
I'm sure it's another zero on the paycheck when you go from co to just plain executive.
But Mike, obviously, I want to say I really enjoyed the audio drama, obviously. And, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed about it was the development, obviously, between Raffi and Seven, you know, and we see kind of this relationship kind of interwoven throughout the entire audio drama. And we even saw this relationship kind of hinted at the end of season one. So who was kind of behind the development of that relationship, on the writing staff?
It was really both the actors and the executive producers and writers, Michael Chabon and Akiva Goldsman. They were shepherding those final episodes through production, and it sort of happened organically between all of them and the actors as we were reaching the end of season one, that they felt very strongly that this was a dynamic they wanted to explore.
Wow. That's awesome. I know obviously at the end of this audio drama, we see them kind of splinter apart, and then obviously we're going to see where they end up in season two. So whose idea was it to kind of have them kind of go their separate ways and kind of splinter apart? Was that more the two of you when developing this audio drama, or was that kind of developed in the writer's room getting ready for season two of Picard?
It was very much the tie-ins always follow the lead of the shows themselves. So, you know, we're fortunate that when I'm working on one of these projects, I always am very aware of what directions the shows are going. And so we were able to very finely tailor our story to what we knew was going to be coming. But I do think it's a little bit more complicated than they're just split apart. I think as the story shows, they are two people who clearly have an affection for and attachment to one another. What they're not sure about is how a relationship between them could possibly work.
Just thinking of the old Friends line, we're on a break. Maybe that's what applies.
Right. Yeah. I cannot believe you just did that, Mike, because now I'm going to be thinking about Friends.
Yep.
For the rest of this episode. It was 12 pages front and back.
Yeah. So you mentioned Kirsten, how the tie-ins always are relying on the television product, that takes, you know, center stage, and then the tie-ins work off of that. So I guess my question is, as I look at the tie-ins now, with looking at the Countdown comics that the two of you worked on and this audio drama, it almost feels more like these tie-ins are filling in missing pieces for all of us. So how, I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question the right way. How close to the quote unquote canon are these newer tie-ins?
Well, like all tie-ins, they're canon until something, well, they're not canon, but they are as close to canon as they can possibly be until something comes along to contradict them, which is always a possibility. It's one of those things where we know the job is dangerous when we take it. But we do the best we can in the time that we're working to make everything consistent and line up with what the shows are going to do. But if they happen to go off in another direction subsequently, there's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of having Kirsten on. You know, she's so plugged into the productions.
That, yeah.
But again, when they start a new season of the show, everything's sort of out the window in terms of what they can, you know, they can't suddenly have Vulcans all have blue skin or something, but
right.
When it comes to things that have been established, that's why in the ancillary stuff, we really try to not give characters, like we don't try to evolve their character the way that, you know, we leave that to the show, but it's more about diving deeper into where they are and who they are when we saw them.
Yeah, I like that. Cause like I look back again, going back to Countdown, I think of how we saw the introduction of Laris and Jaban and that, and then they were part of the show, as at least as an audience following that for all of us. And now we've got this where we're seeing, how Seven and Raffi have kind of, taking this relationship to a different level in the audio drama, and then decide, you know, like you said, Kirsten, it's not necessarily a separation in some ways. It's more of, if we want to do this, we're going to have to figure out some way to make it work. And you see that then in episode, at least in the first three episodes that Jamie and I have seen of Picard, how that is worked into the story as well.
Yes.
So where did the decision come from to go in the direction of an audio drama for this versus just doing either a comic book or a novel for it?
That was Simon and Schuster. They reached out to me actually like 3 years ago and said that they wanted to move into the audio drama format, and they really wanted Picard to be their first offering. And so we started talking a long time ago about the kind of story that would make sense to bridge seasons one and two, and that would serve the Picard characters and Picard universe the best.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of leads me into my next question then. So is audio drama that medium? Is this going to be something we can expect going forward with some of the newer series that are coming out, you know, perhaps even, you know, season two and three of Picard, maybe, you know, is this something we can expect?
I was going to say, Mike, do you want to
jump in? I hope so. Yeah, I think so. I think hopefully this is like proof of concept that there's an audience that's receptive to these. And I think given the amount of Star Trek that's on TV right now, I think it opens the door to all possibility of all kinds of stories being told with not only main characters like Seven and Raffi, but even smaller supporting characters. So I think we've gotten really good response, great response to this. And I think it's showing that Star Trek fans are hungry for Star Trek stories wherever and however they can get them.
Yeah. We're always hungry.
Yeah. Well, I like what you brought out there, Mike, about, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the main characters. I mean, that's always something that I've loved about the literary universe of Star Trek, is that, you know, it's always been that there was either a minor character or, you know, something that someone mentioned in a sentence in one episode, and then an author is able to take and develop a whole storyline based off of that one sentence. So, I mean, that's awesome. That's the kind of thing I love from the literary universe. So I'm looking forward to stuff like that.
Yeah, I just, you know, I love, once again, I really like the story. I like the development. And, you know, it's cool having, it's not just an audio book where all you're hearing is people reading. You're actually hearing special effect, you know, you're hearing sound effects. And it just, it kind of definitely brings the story to life where you can kind of almost picture it in front of you, you know? So obviously I'm so interested in the whole process, you know, thinking of, was it a situation where you got Michelle Hurd and Jerry Ryan signed on first and then you developed the story around them? Or was it kind of like vice versa? You kind of developed the story and then you then went to go get them after. Which kind of came first in the process?
The chicken or the egg?
We developed the story first and we wrote up an outline, laying it out in great detail. And once that was approved by Simon & Schuster and CBS, they reached out to Jerry and Michelle to find out if they would be interested in doing it. And once that was confirmed, we were set to start writing the script.
Nice. Nice. All right. So Jamie's real interested in the audiobook process. And I think it's really cool. I mean, the production value on this was top notch.
They did a great job.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like Jamie said, I was able to visualize the whole thing as we're going forward. The last couple of weeks I've been doing a lot of driving, and this was just something nice to be able to be different from the audiobooks because of the feeling that's put into it by the actors. So I'm interested to know about the comic book process, because the two of you again worked together on the Picard Countdown series. So a process on a comic book, especially a series like that, I'm assuming that you are writing out your whole story first and then figuring out where the breaks go for the individual issues. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually kind of the ideal, is that you would have the whole story plotted, but sometimes more so on a continuing series, you have an overall idea of where you're going, but the specifics of what happens on each page, you figure out as you write each issue. But the actual sort of storytelling process wasn't that different between the audiobooks and the comics. You know, Kirsten and I just get together and we talk out the story, and we just sit on the phone and hit the story ball back and forth and come up with things that make us excited, because I found that the surest way to entertain your fans is if you're entertained and you can't wait to tell the story, and that energy will translate into the work. So, and then it's just a matter of, you know, the biggest difference is when you're writing a comic script, you're describing what's happening in each panel so the artist can draw it. And in the audiobooks, you have to forget all of that because you don't have any visual cues. So you substitute that with what the sound effects would be. So we figured out in a given scene, what are all the possible sound effects that could be happening? And then the ultimate benefit of an audiobook is that you have music, which I wish comics had, like when you open them, like one of those greeting cards, it just plays music when you open it up. But that technology is way beyond what we have right now. So yeah, that was, it was just a really cool, different process coming from the comics.
Now do you guys almost have to, like, you know, I know storyboards are used quite substantially in cartoons and movies. Is it almost like you have to storyboard it to kind of like visually see where you're going next sometimes and how the action's going to be? Or is that not even really part of the process
in the comics or the audiobook?
Oh yeah. Well, I guess both. I mean, I would assume, I would assume in the comics, but what about with drama?
Well, be specific, Jamie.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of the same. I mean, I don't do in comics, we don't really thumbnail or anything. We leave all that, but we do describe the act. So like in the comic script, you would say, this is a wide shot. This is a medium shot. This is our POV is over someone's shoulder. You're sort of describing the camera, right? You don't have a camera in the audio drama. So it's much more, it's dialogue is carrying the story. Like it's hard to even in an audio drama in script, right? You know, the character walks across the room and sits down in the lazy boy. Like that's kind of hard to, cause you don't see it. Right. So you just hear sort of random footsteps and then something, whatever the lazy boy sounds like. And so you sort of have to completely switch your toolbox for that. But
I did find that when we were working on the script, you know, we got super specific with the soundscapes. So we tried to sort of close our eyes and imagine everything that you could hear, you know, in a desert night or aboard a specific ship. The differences in what the comm signals might sound like, depending on who's talking to whom. Starfleet communications are probably going to be more clear than Fenris Ranger communications, for example. And then we also had in mind, not the specific music, but that there would be themes that would repeat and evolve musically throughout the piece. And so we had in the script, you know, what kind of sound cues we were looking for. And there were a lot of places in this one where it was real. It was, I don't know how you say this, but it was, you know, music coming from a real source as opposed to scoring. So those cues also had to be very specific in terms of the style that we were looking for.
Hey, you know, that's interesting because we're talking about how there's so much that's offered within the audio drama and you don't even always think of the work that goes into it. You kind of take it for granted. Like I sat there and I was like, oh yeah, that's really nice that you can hear, like you said, the desert night as they're there having their conversation. You don't think about what needs to go into that for that to happen.
Yeah. It was intense.
Yeah. So, and that kind of leads me to the question of like, how long does it take you from start to finish to do an audio drama? Like from day one concept, how long does that process take?
Well, some of that is determined by other realities that come in the middle of, like contract negotiations and release schedules and when everybody is available to do a thing. So just in terms of our part of it, the writing of it, we probably spent a good 3 months developing the story and the outline, and then we had a nice long break, and then we probably spent another 3 months working on the script.
So both of you come from a writing background, both within the comic world and the novel world. Is it different in a case like this for the audio drama, or even Kirsten for writing a television show, a different process when it comes to scripting it versus the story itself and the narration behind it?
Well, each form has its own. Go ahead, Mike.
No,
you go ahead. I was just gonna say each form has its own specific set of tools that you have available, right? So in a novel, you're gonna have the ability to go deep inside characters' heads and talk about what they're thinking and how they're feeling and not just what they say. In a teleplay, you're constantly focused on what are we seeing. You're not directing, but you are creating point of view in a very specific way, and you know, trying to lead the audience and the readers through that so that they understand how that story is going to look and feel very specifically. In the audio drama, all you have is what you hear. So Mike and I, you know, looked for every single possible thing that could come out of that would help us be clear about where these characters were at and what was happening between them, knowing that there were a lot of times where, you know, on screen a simple look between two people can convey a ton of information, but we had no ability to do that. So without getting too expository, we still had to find ways through dialogue and sound to help the audience ground themselves in the world and where the characters specifically were.
Mm-hmm. That cover all of what you had to say, Mike?
And much better than I could express it.
So. Is that why you're her Robin?
Yeah. Like Robin, I just stand there while Batman beats up the villains going, yeah, go back.
That could not be further from the truth. Batman.
No. Oh, that's funny. Well, I know I can tell you, Kirsten, from talking with some of our listeners on the network, that you are a hero to a lot of people because you finally put. Well, wait a minute. Don't be all happy just yet. Let me tell you why.
Oh, fabulous. Guys, I gotta go.
Because you finally put Janeway and Chakotay together in the novel series.
I did.
I can't tell you how many people tell me all the time, oh, in the novels, they're together. You know, for me, that's real life. And I thought it was kind of interesting how that was hinted a little bit in the beginning of this audio drama when Seven and Raffi were talking about past relationships. You know, Seven said, yeah, there was something before, but, you know, nothing came of it.
I mean, you know, you will have to forgive me for, if I feel that I can and it's appropriate, reinforcing stuff that has been created elsewhere. I'm always shoring up the shows and, you know, but in this case, and I think Mike and I find places to do this in the comics as well. You know, there is a version of this universe that exists outside of that, that has its own history. And, you know, it did not feel inappropriate or that it would contradict anything to go ahead and drop that in.
Yeah.
I guess I'll say.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And I didn't name names or anything. I mean, for people who didn't read the books, they're not going to have any idea who we're talking about.
But that's almost better storytelling because you kind of leave it to the imagination of the people that, you know, want it to be Janeway and Chakotay. They think it's
Seven and Chakotay.
You
know, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's like, to me, the best form. It's like they leave it open to interpretation and people can think what they want to think. Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm going to ask this question, you know, Kirsten, to you specifically, do we have any more novels on the horizon out of you, or are you kind of now down this path of pretty much, you know, doing the television series stuff and kind of getting away from that?
Well, my publishers and editors have been very kind to me, both in allowing me to finish the two novels I was contracted to do after I started working on the shows. And in letting me know that if I ever want to do it again, I can, and I would never, ever say never. The challenge right now is the amount of time and energy it takes to write a novel, and the number of hours that there are in the day. Because my regular day job is keeps me very, very busy. So, you know, it sucked to have projects announced and then to ask people to wait two and a half years for them. I was very conscious of the fact that that was frustrating for folks. And I don't want to put people in that position again. But I wouldn't say never. I just don't know at this moment in time when that might be happening.
Well, I'm sure I speak for other people when I say I'm glad you are where you are.
Thank you.
You really add, you know, a tremendous amount to the, you know, to the producers that make these shows. I mean, you guys are putting out wonderful content.
Thank you.
I'm excited to be able to watch it and view it and listen to it and, you know, be a part of this golden age that you're a huge instrument.
Well, that's very gratifying. It's nice to hear when people enjoy what you're doing. It's really, really great.
Dayton Ward and David Mack speak highly of you. You don't have to echo this. You don't have to echo the same sentiment. Don't worry about that.
I would not hesitate to echo the same sentiment. They are two of my dearest friends. We have been in the trenches together for decades, and I could not adore them more. I'm very fortunate that I consider them, and I think they consider me, creative partners.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And they're also, they've got their fingers in the,
yep,
in the franchise, you know, in the shows as well. David is advised on Star Trek Prodigy, and Dayton plays a key role in making sure every part of Trek is talking to the other and that things are a really cohesive whole when it comes to the canon.
Yeah, I talked to Dave, I guess it's like 2, maybe 3 years ago now, and he was telling me, you are not going to believe what comes out of Prodigy. You're just going to be shocked. And most certainly he was. No, he was not. He was not. So
that's a great really show. Great. So, such a beautiful show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get to. And the thing I like about it is I get to do a show with my daughter about it.
Yeah.
So, oh, how cool.
Which she enjoys. So, I mean, I enjoy
how old
too.
Is your daughter?
She's going to be 13 next month. But she's been podcasting now for, well, it'll be 4 years. So,
wow.
Oh yeah. She started early. She met the two guys that started the network that we're on, and fell in love with the thought of it. So, you know, her and I just kind of started up with something small, and now she covers Prodigy for this network.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I got to check it out. That's so cool.
Yeah.
It's Discovering Trek, and Jamie and his son were on one of our episodes too.
And it's always an opportunity.
How old is your son?
My son is 12. Sorry. No, but I was going
to
say,
yeah. I'd love to hear kids talking about Trek. That's so rad.
Yeah. And being enthusiastic about it too, you know, and, you know, it's always an opportunity too for her to make fun of her father too on that podcast.
Oh, God.
She doesn't always have that forum any other time, but boy, she lays it on thick.
Oh yeah. She certainly, once she gets behind that microphone, she's got no problem giving it to her old man. That's for sure. So we've heard about, Kirsten's future with television, it seems. Mike, do you have upcoming projects? I know you're on the team for Discovery in the 32nd Century now and at IDW, right?
Yeah. The first issue just dropped today, focuses on Grudge, the cat. It's told from Grudge's point of view. So it's in comic shops now. And future issues, each one focuses on a different character. So the next one will be Adira, and then Detmer, and then Linus. So that's a lot of fun. And then on the most of my days are taking up working on the Star Trek games, all the different video games that are out and that are in production. So there's a lot of cool stuff on the way.
Yeah. Oh,
a lot of cool stuff I wish I could talk about, but I'll come on and talk about it when it comes out.
I was going to say, it sounds like we're going to have to be in contact with you again at some point to discuss that.
Happy to come on and nerd out about games.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's right in our wheelhouse on this show anyway.
Great.
So it's Star Trek Picard, No Man's Land. It's available wherever you purchase audiobooks, and it is also available on the physical media as well. You can purchase it on CD. Kirsten, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast, all kinds of fun.
Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, and I look forward so much to the work that you're going to continue to put out. So
yep,
please keep working.
Thanks so much. From your lips to all the gods here.
Right.
Exactly.
Is there a product or collecting service you'd like to hear featured on the Collector's Corner? Or maybe even in this case, an author or producers of television shows, message us at @divine_treasury on Twitter and let us know. Until next time, you've been listening to The Collector's Corner, part of the Divine Treasury on the Trek Geeks Podcast Network. The Divine Treasury, connecting through collecting.
For the Divine Treasury is provided by 5-Year Mission. They're writing an original song for each episode of Star Trek. Hear more of their music at 5yearmission.net. The Divine Treasury is a production of Coconut Media Works. Executive producers Bill Smith and Dan Davidson. For more great Star Trek discussion, discover the other shows of the Trek Geeks Podcast Network at trekgeeks.com or find us in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app.